You're listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. Hey there, my name is Kevin, and this is the roundtable edition of the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast. Like I said in the previous episode, we're going to be changing things up a little bit. From now on, we're splitting up the roundtable segment from the interview segment to give each their own show. This will give us a little more time to do other things during our roundtable time. We'll still do the recap of the interview, but we're working on adding some new segments to this edition of the podcast. So, if you have any ideas of what you'd like to hear, please email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. So from now on, we're going to alternate between the interview podcast and the roundtable podcast. The bonus is you'll get a podcast every week as opposed to one every other week. Well, now that we have all that info out of the way, let's get the discussion going. Joining me, as always, are Jordan, Chris, and Robert. How is everybody doing today?
Hello. Doing great.
Well, Chris, I haven't really talked to you much today, so I have to ask, how was the Wilco show last night?
It was amazing. I've seen them, I think that was my fourth time, and they just keep getting better. And thankfully, I don't know if you heard, Nels Klein had chicken pox last week, so they
came
to a bunch of dates, but he was in rare form, so.
Was this their first show back?
I'm not sure when they started back, but.
Did he have any bumps or rashes on him?
I wasn't that close, but he did have a beard, so maybe he grew that too.
Cover up.
Right.
That's funny. So it was a good show.
Yeah, it was, and the venue was pretty cool. It was one of those outdoor amphitheaters, but they kept the crowd pretty limited to maybe 4,000.
Really?
So it definitely wasn't like a massive, sprawling mess of people.
I was wondering what they were doing out there. So
yeah, it's a good venue.
Slightly larger than the... the concert that Fran talked about.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Just as intimate, though.
Just right. For sure. But, speaking of Fran, let's jump into the discussion about Robert's interview with Fran. Just in case any of our listeners out there haven't heard episode 8, Fran runs a website called concertsinyourhome.com, and basically they're trying to connect artists who want to play house concerts with people who are putting on house concerts, and so did anything jump out at you guys, find it thought-provoking, get some creative juices going of a different place to play that you haven't already tried?
It scared me.
It scared you? Why did it scare you?
Oh, that part he was talking about how, basically saying, you know, you really need to think about whether you're cut out for this.
Right.
Every time I've played in front of, like, a tiny group, I'm so frightened, whereas I could get up in front of 800 people and be, like, not even nervous at all.
Yeah,
you can put on that kind of front, but...
Those are actually, I think, the hardest shows. I've played in front of thousands, and I've played in front of a couple people, and the couple people ones always freaked me out.
I know, totally. You can't really, like, work yourself up into any kind of, like, actor position,
yeah.
Or, like, have that bravado, or even really take on a different character, because it's...
And that divide of the stage usually isn't there, and...
Right.
I always just felt like they're sitting right in front of me, staring at me. If I screw up, they're going to notice. There's no light show to distract them.
There's no reverb.
Yeah, there's no reverb.
See, now I always really, with one of my groups we played in, we did both acoustic sets and electric sets. And I always really liked the sort of living room show where you're, especially if you have friends there that like know the songs or can sing along, you have that sort of familial element that you don't necessarily wouldn't have in a, I mean, less anonymity for sure, but there is, you know, like Fran talks about, a kind of intimacy that you just wouldn't get, you know, that the, mm-hmm. I don't know if it actually has to be more intimidating. If say you did start out playing with more people you knew or, you know, fellow musicians or friends that have seen you play and probably aren't going to intimidate you.
I'm sure it's like anything. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get.
Part of it is also, you know, when you go to a club or a larger venue, the audience is a little looser, you know, some might be gagging. Right. They're more apt to join in and sing or whatever.
Well, you can go
when there's 10 people sitting in a house, so they're not going to start singing or clapping along or doing anything like that. So you can get them loosened up, but I thought it was great, just the idea of what he was talking about, if just the general idea of getting outside of what you might consider as being a traditional venue.
Right.
And most people are just booking themselves and they're just attempting clubs or whatever, and I think the idea of doing a concert at a home or something like that, a lot of people probably haven't thought of it. It's, you know, if you really want to build that fan base and have that intimate connection, that's a great place to start, you know, at your own home. Venue's available, I'm sure. You can make it happen.
And you can have, you can have a house show with 30 people, or you could have a house show with 100 people, depending on your space. I mean, it, you know, may violate some fire codes, depending on how big your house is.
But if it's a rock show, it has to be done.
The funny thing about that is, like, I've played a ton of house parties.
Yeah.
I've never played a house concert where sort of you're the sole entertainment and people are really there to listen. I've been, you know, in someone's basement rocking out and half the people are listening and half the people are out and back getting drunk and being obnoxious. Mm-hmm. But,
and I think that's what a lot of people in the rock world think of when they think of a house show. They're probably thinking more of a house party, but Fran really set a distinction there of it being, this is a concert. This is something where the people are coming to appreciate the music and listen and not be out back getting drunk and talking and causing, you know, all sorts of distractions while someone's performing and just being ignored.
Right.
And I think it was a cool idea. The idea of, you know, getting people to have, you know, even talked about making a potluck dinner out of that or something like that where it's more of a night that people remember. And I think that's part of, I think, the draw to doing something like that.
I think that anytime you put people in a different setting than they're used to experience art, it's going to give you a slightly different perspective, of course, on the music or whatever is being played. And anytime that you know, you can experiment and find different venues and places. I mean, I'm sure we've all had experiences playing. I've played parks and churches and houses and coffee shops, and it's always a new challenge. I mean, especially if you're playing outside, sound can be horrible, but it is, you know, I mean, it definitely builds your skills and it allows you to connect with people in all different sorts of ways. And I definitely think that being able to think of your career or the options that you have as a musician as being any place that you can, you know, sit down and strum a guitar can be your venue, even if it's, I mean, obviously, there's street corners everywhere where musicians are doing just that.
Yeah. Well, I think with the house concert idea, I know Fran kind of focused in on the singer-songwriter and maybe even having, you know, he even said you could be a combo. I think there's places to do it with a band. One of the bands I was in, we had developed this acoustic set just out of necessity that our manager had us running ragged all day long, where we would be doing an acoustic set on a radio station and a college student center at a music store, you know, just all these places all day long. So we just developed this, you know, the songs in our set that worked acoustically, and the drummer played like the snare and our keyboard player played a melodica.
Mm-hmm.
And people just ate that stuff up. It was like, yeah. There would, you know, and it'd be a lot of places where we would just show up, you know, it wasn't necessarily like they were putting on a show. It was someone was, you know, making arrangements for us to be there, but it, you know, like a college student center, and, you know, people would just be going crazy and we'd sell more CDs there than we would at the big rock show that night. And it just, people love that intimate connection where they see your real people. And, you know, there's also a type of song that caters to that setting, and you know, so I wouldn't necessarily say you have to be a singer-songwriter. You know, I would say get creative. If your songs aren't suited for that environment, then, you know, there's other things you can do. But I would say it's beyond just the singer-songwriter, because, you know, people, especially in that situation, if you have CDs out and fans that have heard the music before, they hear it in a different way and they love hearing, you know, a different arrangement of that song, you know, and that up close and personal thing. So
You left Kmart off the list.
Well, we'll get to that. We're going to get to that. We're going to get back to the list of that stuff. So it wasn't Kmart. It was Walmart.
Walmart, yeah.
We'll get to the stories of that in a minute. But any other observations or thoughts on the interview with Fran?
90 minutes is amazing, I think, for someone to... If people that do this regularly can keep a crowd sort of wrapped for that long alone, that's an achievement. I mean,
he talks a lot about artists trading off, and the couple times I have played house shows, like that's one of the cool. There's this great ukulele player from Santa Cruz, Oliver Brown. And a couple of times, him and my band would take turns. We'd play like a house show, and just he'd play a couple songs, we'd play a couple songs, he'd play a couple songs. And that works really well.
Because, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
I'm used to that, like, quick 40-minute set.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, I'm
yeah,
sure.
40, 90, or 90 minutes sitting to someone, singer-songwriter, I'd be asleep.
Oh, that's kind of another thing that you just addressed it by saying that rock bands can do these things, too, but... I've always had that impression of house concerts as sort of the smiling folk singer that, like, it's for these sort of yuppies that just want to feel good. And but it's good to hear that there's lots of other kinds. I'd be interested if hip-hop people do it, too. I'm sure they do.
Yeah. You could do some cool stuff. And I think that's one of the main reasons we wanted to do an interview like this with Fran. After we had the episode with Alicia Rose from the Doug Fir, we got a lot of response from people saying, not quite ready for that kind of venue, or my music doesn't fit that venue, you know, but I want to get booked someplace. And, you know, it's just a matter of you got to get creative. And this is one way you can do it, you know, put on a show at your house and, you know, get creative. Try some new instrumentation that works at a lower volume. Get people out there and have fun.
You know,
with it.
Fran talks a lot about nationally touring artists who then sort of speckle their tours with these house concerts because they make a little bit more money at them. And he talks about sort of establishing yourself first before you're ready to play the house concerts. But in my experience, in sort of a different circle, there were a lot of groups of musicians that started in houses and then eventually worked their way up to venues. So it's you know, it goes both ways.
One thing I was going to say is also the idea of doing a house concert. I've seen bands make that like a contest, and you know, the fans and this certain amount of miles from their hometown, you know, they have some sort of contest, and the winner gets a concert in their home.
Metallica did that.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, big name artists do that, and so that's, if it's something where you're not gonna do that on a regular basis, that's a great way to get, you know, some fans to go crazy and take notice and maybe get some local publicity. And so, I mean, there's a whole bunch of angles on it, and you just have to think about it and, you know,
and see what's best for you and your audience.
You might find out that it's works better for you than all the clubs you've been trying to play and loud, crappy sound systems and all this. It's nice, quiet.
Smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah, smoke-filled rooms. It's nice and quiet. People are listening and buying your CD. It's like win-win.
Hopefully Oregon will amend their ways soon and we can breathe free while we play.
They outlawed breathing in bars. Should we move on to the our shared stories?
Yeah, so we, you know, since we've been talking about doing concerts in a house and, or, you know, which just seems outside of the norm, we thought we'd share some of our stories of venues we've played that are outside the norm and maybe you should avoid or maybe you should try. And so who wants to go first?
Jordan?
Okay, I'll start. Well, I'm a classical musician. I play the flute. I'm in a flute quartet, and I've played in various groups over the years, and we've played all kinds of crazy places. I've played in hospitals, nursing homes, public schools, like for middle school kids and high school kids, churches, and weddings and other events that groups get hired for.
And weddings are... I think we'll probably at some point do a podcast on that side of a professional musician, or because a lot of indie type artists make some their living doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, I've played all kinds of weird places.
What do you find? I mean, I suppose what we rock musicians consider traditional venue is a bit different than what a classical musician considers. What is more regular show for you, or is that the norm?
It's sort of a mixture of both. Whenever we play, I've played like coffee shops and like theaters and halls and stuff like that. If it's just like my small flute group, we're just a bunch of nerds playing classical music. So it's mainly just like our friends coming with books to read to keep themselves occupied.
So you're reading music.
You're reading.
Wow.
So you're not actually worried about people being distracted from the music. I mean,
no, a lot of what I'm doing tends to be more background stuff.
Right.
And then, well, that's not true, because like in college and stuff, I've been in ensembles where, you know, we put on recitals and there's people there to see it, but that's parents coming because I have to be there to support their kids.
So you go to a venue, I mean, where his friend is, you know, kind of upset by the fact that people are going into concerts and paying attention and doing other things other than watching the music,
mm-hmm.
you kind of go to a venue expecting them not to pay attention.
Right.
So do you get nervous when they do start paying attention?
It can be a little scary. No, it can be really awkward, like bringing up what we were talking about earlier about the when it's fewer people and trying to get people to relax. A lot of shows that I play are just really that really awkward silence, listening to the pages turn, because, you know, we're all reading music,
uh-huh.
and adjusting the stand, and you hear, like, and you're breathing in. And I think it's definitely more comfortable playing to smaller people, like a smaller group of people, than a large group of people that are just sitting there dead silent.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What would be the ideal venue for your type of group, in your mind?
Well, like playing in like a concert hall where there's people coming to actually listen to what I'm doing, and people that are, you know, really into classical music and there to listen to our group. And definitely like concert hall has a really good sound too. The group that I play in, we just played in this coffee shop downtown in Portland, and there's a video of it. Someone was recording, and it's hilarious because the coffee grinder keeps coming on. So we're like watching this video, and you can't even hear us because there's, you know, the coffee grinder, and it's just.
And now I'm subjecting you to playing with my band, so they'll have to somehow cut above the guitar and drums.
That's the only way Chris could get Jordan to come to one of his shows. She keeps promising. She keeps promising. Oh, I'll come check you guys out tonight.
Mine is just like, nope, your flute quartet is playing with my band.
Jeopardy must have been on again that night. Well, the coffee shop, I think, is an interesting venue. I've been to, for a while there, it seemed like that was the trendy thing that was popping up everywhere. You know, people were starting their coffee shops with live music, and I think that can be a cool venue, but so many times, and I've even been guilty of this, people go to that setting and they put on a full rock show, and there's like, you know, 12 or 15 tables, and they're like, all everyone's outside by the end of it because it's so loud in there. And I think, you know, if you're considering venues that, you know, aren't a club that's used to having louder music, you gotta tailor it towards the venue to get a much better response from the audience. I know that's a mistake I've made, and, you know, the band, I remember the one situation where the band after us played, and they got even louder, and it was unbearable. I mean, it was excruciatingly loud because this room was, you know, only had like 15 tables, and, you know, it wasn't designed to be a rock and roll hall. So
right.
So
you definitely have to be flexible as a musician.
Yeah.
and take into consideration the space you're playing in.
Yeah. So when you're thinking of alternative venues, what are some cool ideas outside of the box that I can play? You got to consider that you can't necessarily just roll in, unload your stuff, turn it all the way up and blast everyone to the back of the room. That's not going to get the results you want either. So
it's a nice contrast, though. On the last tour that we did, mostly we were playing at proper rock venues, and we did the whole full band loud thing, but then occasionally we'd play these like Borders or Barnes and Noble things where we got the amp at the lowest possible setting and singing really softly, and it's just nice to do that almost to like cleanse your palate
before
you go back into the next loud setting.
And those were some of my favorite shows that I've done where we had the full band set up, where like the drummer might have just been playing kick, hi-hat, and snare, and and we were all just kind of sitting down. I'm still playing electric guitar, but we had the volume really low. And, you know, because when you're on stage in a rock setting, you usually just hear part of the instruments. You know, I only hear my guitar and, like, some of the drums and maybe the vocalist or whatever.
Everything but in those, it's just sort of
yeah, it's just a
noise.
Mush in the background. Where those settings, it was like it really felt musical to me, where I could hear everybody in the band, and you just I don't know. I really enjoyed playing some of those where you felt more of musicianship coming out than just yeah. loud.
And then you're on the same page as everyone else in
yeah.
the band,
yeah.
rather than just hoping you're on
yeah.
the same page.
Had some of those crash and burns too.
You're playing your guitar solo, look over, everyone's just staring at you.
Oh, man. In the
panic.
In the band I was in, Small Town Poets, the bass player and I, you know, there'd be these situations where we just start looking at each other. There was one day where it was this loud rock song in our set, and it was just a terrible sound situation where you really couldn't decipher anything. And I'm, like, staring at the vocalist thinking he's in the wrong spot. And I realized I was playing the chorus and everyone else is still on the verse. And I looked over and the bass player was just like, he could have killed me with the stare he was giving me. I'm like, I'm going to get chewed out the second I walk off that stage.
So you just kept playing?
Yeah, I just kept playing. And luckily, no one in the audience seemed to notice. I don't know what that says about the people in the audience. But it's just, they're like, oh, that was amazing. I'm like,
okay,
I guess it doesn't matter what I do up there. But Chris, you had a list, or Robert, you had a list of
wrote a few notes here. I wanted to tell a story, actually, not from the point of view of a musician, but as of a fan. Because when I was in my early 20s, I really, just around the time, I mean, I'd been into music, but I just really started to fall in love with live performances when I started seeing people in smaller venues. And specifically, there was this place in Santa Cruz that was just a house, and it was a Third Street house, and they had, and it was a venue that basically, they had shows there two or three times a week, and bands from all over the United States came and played there, and it was just this sort of like, this synchronistic thing that happened because there were no venues in Santa Cruz to play in. And Santa Cruz is, you know, it's near San Francisco. It's a cool little town, like lots of musicians there. A lot of bands wanted to play there on their way up and down the coast. And so these girls that had the house had this huge basement. And they're just like, well, if you guys want to set up shows there, do it. And people did. They set up two or three shows a week at this
wow.
place. And
they regretted it.
Well, they liked it. They liked all the attention. And it was kind of party atmosphere or whatever. But I got to see these bands that were like my heroes, you know, these underground groups and indie rock groups, bands like Unwound, and this is my list is for Brian Jonestown Massacre and the Dandy Warhols and 3 Mile Pilot. They were all just kind of 90s indie bands that I was really into, and they just play in a basement to like 30 to 50 people, just crowded in this little space. It was really intimate and a little bit sweaty, but But it was like an established thing. It was very much like, you know, the band would come into town, they have a place to stay. They could crash in the basement or up in the living room. A lot of times the girls that lived there would fix food for people. They'd make sure that there was, you know, beer. And, they ran it like a venue, you know, like any other venue. And it was cool because it was kind of secret. The house was far away enough from other houses that it wasn't, you know, there weren't noise complaints. And it was all enshrouded in bushes. So you sort of walked in, they had all these Christmas lights that sort of lit up like a canopy. And you walk in and there'd be all the young hipsters in town, you know, waiting for the band to come in, you know, and they'd pull up in the van. And I just got such a kick out of that. I mean, I don't really go to shows like that anymore, but like that was, I definitely had stars in my eyes for about a year, just, you know, going and seeing all these groups every week.
That's cool. So they still do that anymore?
No, they moved out and probably got married and
or evicted because of all the noise.
Sounds like I did this tour through Canada. It was this town called Nanaimo. It's kind of like a working class town, nothing going on, definitely not a bastion of high culture or anything, mm-hmm. but there were these kids that I guess just were like, there's nothing to do here. So they started this thing called the called the And Loan Gallery. So it's this sort of joint venue art space, just a place for where they really just hang out all week, and then on the weekends they throw shows, and it's great because it's like suddenly there's an event, so all the kids come and they're totally appreciative. And
yeah, and I think that's one thing that you mentioned, going to like a working class town. I think when people are considering playing shows, they mainly focus on, all right, I'm gonna hit LA, then I'm gonna hit Vegas, then I'm gonna hit San Francisco, and they skip a whole lot of towns of people that love music. Mm-hmm. And people that are probably less jaded by the music scene, or you know, don't get the opportunity to experience good music all that often live because people just skip over their town. And I think if you connect with, you know, find out people in those towns who are trying to get stuff going and hook up with them, you can have some pretty cool concerts in those towns and skip the frustration of trying to get people in LA to pay attention to you when they've got a bazillion other bands trying to do the same thing.
And then you don't have to drive 6 hours to the next town. You can cut it in half. Or
yeah,
thirds.
Yeah.
And people, if there isn't a venue, people get real creative. I mean, there's, I know in Northern California, there was a boxing ring that was having shows, and the bands would play in the middle of the boxing ring.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And I know in Santa Cruz for a while, after the Third Street, the Basement shows, they were doing shows at a movie theater. I actually don't know if the owners of the new movie theater actually knew about it.
It was just the employees, the clerks after.
Yeah, it was the clerks. They would just, I mean, sometimes they just have parties and show whatever movie was playing, but like.
I totally forgot I played a show at a movie theater. It was extremely awkward. It was like a Friday night. The promoter just happened to rent one of the theaters. So We're wheeling in all our gear and people are waiting in line to go see movies. And it's like, they're all, what's going on? And it was weird. It was. Great sounding room though.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really set up for sound. So, renting out a movie theater might work in your town. Well, one of my venues that we've played, and Chris alluded to it at the beginning, was we went on a Walmart tour. This was hatched.
More than one Walmart.
Oh yeah.
Every Walmart.
Yes. So this was. Well, in theory, this was a plan hatched by our manager, and you know, our band, you know, the industry we were in was based out of Nashville, so we weren't in country music, but you have that country music influence, and as far as how the industry thinks, and I guess at that time there was some country artists that were just on tour and setting up in, you know, the entrance to Walmart, selling tons of CDs. So our manager said, well, we're going to do that. And we ended up getting hooked up at this this big grand opening at Walmart in the Nashville area, where like the owner of Walmart was there and we met him and all that. But and we played on a big stage outside. And so we kind of got the impression when our manager was talking about a Walmart tour, it was going to be more like that, you know, something a bit more festive. And it was not.
They roped you in with that one good show.
Yeah.
First one's free.
And I have to say, in the end, it was probably worth it due to the amount of press we got over it. So many people in the industry, you know, because they don't know what's going on outside of Nashville. They don't keep tabs on that. They just hear what's going on and assume, you know, certain things. And so they thought it was this the most amazing thing, because most people don't realize that Walmart is the number one retailer of music. So the idea was, if they're the number one retailer of music, we're going to go play where people are buying the most music.
Right.
And
that makes sense.
And if it had been country music, it probably would have been a huge hit. And but anyway, there was one day where we had done this several times, and we were just like, oh, please, not another Walmart. I mean, the best thing about it, I guess, was, you know, when you forgot your toothpaste, you knew you were going to be at Walmart. So we were playing one time, literally set up in the men's department, like the t-shirts are next to us and on stools right by the aisle. And it just, you know, it wasn't the production that we were expecting. I mean, we weren't expecting like, you know, lights and junk. We were just expecting that there might be people coming to the store to see us play, because they put up signs and stuff. So we'd have grandmas walking by and people who were at Walmart, you know, at 12 o'clock on a weekday. And
they're like, does this come in extra large?
Yeah. It was literally like people be walking by like, oh, that's cute. And so one day our road manager, who was just trying to find a way to harass us. He went and got on one of those motorized wheelchairs. So right in the middle of a song, he comes like flying out of one of the clothing departments down the aisle with a total straight face on, you know, not like he's laughing up going, "Ah, hi guys." He's just like being totally serious. And he just like, he pulls up right in front of us, just looking at us and like he's having trouble motorizing around. Like, and we were just losing it, trying to make it through the song. And he's like running into our stools. And then he just takes off running through all the clothes again. It was just like, oh boy, this is the highlight of us playing at Walmart. It was, but yeah, you know, sometimes you hit, sometimes you don't. But the idea was that we're going to play for where the music buyers are. And it didn't work out at Walmart.
This large flute choir that I played in Massachusetts when I was living there. And we did a grand opening of, I think it was Walmart, too. It was a little bit of a different experience. But
yeah.
We were set up in the produce department. And we were complete background music. No one's there to see us. And we're just, like, awkwardly, you know, playing. And people are picking up blueberries and, like, looking for bruises on their apples.
We were playing this. Yeah, the Walmart thing, it was, the first couple times we did it, it was a little embarrassing when we set up the gigantic merchandise display and no one cares as they walk by. So we scaled it down. It was a different experience. The one upside is that we did meet the guy who, he wasn't the owner, but the president of Walmart, and he owns the Kansas City Royals, and we were all big baseball fans, and so he arranged for when we were in Kansas City one time, a private tour of the stadium and everything like that.
Wow.
So that was fun. So the agony
highs
paid off.
And lows.
The highs and lows.
We got to play the Gore Jam Theater Walmart.
That's right. I've done it all. Another venue that actually I thought was going to be very scary that turned out to be really cool was, it was around that time where a lot of people were doing concerts, you know, coffee house things, and they were naming it whatever. Especially, I was in the Christian music scene, and so it was really big in that scene because, you know, they're not going to go out to bars or whatever. But we'd get all these venue names.
I thought Christians could drink.
Well, most of the fans were like youth groups.
Oh, okay.
They can, but not when you're 16 years old going to a rock show.
Oh, right.
So this particular day, I happened to be driving into town, driving our bus, and I'm looking at the tour sheet, and it says, you know, we're playing The Barn. So I've seen all these, you know, weird names for people calling their coffee shops. Yep.
The Barn's not that weird of a name.
No, it's not. But so I'm thinking, okay, whatever, noticing the directions, it's saying literally, turn at the red barn after the big oak tree. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So I'm driving in. Well, what is an oak tree? I don't even know what an oak tree is. That's a big tree. And then I start seeing these barns go by. I'm like, well, that barn looks kind of brick colored. Is that what they meant by red? And finally find this bright red barn and make the right turn. So I get into town, and then I'm out of town. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm still not to the end of the directions. Where's the venue? And I'm going out, and it was literally out on farmland, and there was this place where there was these two barns, and that's where we were playing. And I'm going to pull up, and there's these two farmer guys warming themselves around a fire because it was in the middle of winter. I'm like, you can't be serious. We're playing in that barn. And that's what they meant by the barn. It wasn't their fancy name.
Was there like horror music soundtrack playing in
That's what, I mean, I think someone was just dying to call our manager and figure out why we were playing this venue. So anyway, we pull up and find out, yeah, they do concerts there. I think it was like once or twice a month. And so we didn't know what to expect, so we're setting up. You know, they were paying us, so we're setting up to play, and they had bought these huge, like, Canon heaters that are just, like, sound like jet engines in the background, you know, the concert, because it was in a barn, you know. So we're sitting, I'm like, oh, gosh, is anyone going to show up? It was packed.
Wow.
It was jam-packed, and it was an awesome show because nothing else to do in that town. Mm-hmm. And everybody, those guys had done a good job of it, and they had, really, people knew that it was going to be good, so would pack it out every night, and ended up being an amazing show. You know, the heaters did supply some nice background to everything, but that was one of those venues where I thought, you got to be kidding me, and it ended up being a great show. So Walmart, no. Barnes, maybe. Yes.
Church is good.
Church is good. I played the funky church. It was great.
I play lots of churches.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of classical music performances are, in churches.
Good echo, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
I did a kind of a singer-songwriter night where there was four or five Portland people at this nice little cathedral with a piano and
that's awesome.
Beautiful acoustics. It was nice. More of that.
I've played many, many churches. Most of them didn't have nice... The more modern churches weren't built with the acoustics in mind, generally.
Mm-hmm. But for our audience sake, if you guys have any wild stories, please email us, or you can always comment on every episode, and we'd love to see a whole bunch of wacky venue stories.
Yeah, if you have any, I'm sure there's good ones out there, and I'm sure we could have gone on and on with a lot more of them.
But... I'd like to hear more about the cruise musicians.
Yeah, I just got back from a cruise recently, and I was found the whole musical experience, I'll just say, interesting.
were there any like Neil Diamond, Tom Jones sort of characters?
No,
like pastel
was,
suits.
No, nothing? it was not. It was really not what I expected. I mean, it was a major cruise line, and I was more expecting, like the Disneyland type experience. Where if you go to Disneyland, they hire great musicians, and unfortunately, they get overlooked a lot of times, but. If you just happen to relax for a few minutes, and you'll see some great stuff there. But I was expecting that quality, and it was not. It was.
He described it as if it was like a David Lynch film.
It was horrifying. It was. There was a couple people. It was like, I don't understand how they even got that gig. I mean, that's
how they didn't get thrown overboard.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's cruise ships out there with good music.
I'm sure there are, and I would bet this cruise was to Alaska, and probably caters to an older crowd, even though there was a lot of younger people on it. But I bet the ones that go to the Caribbean are probably stocked with better musicians. I don't know. It's something I wish I'd had a recorder with me. I would have liked to have talked to some of them and see what
How come you're such a bad musician?
No, there was some decent musicians on there, but there was some that was like, wow. Yeah, but I would have liked to have talked to some of them and see and asked them if they were. Because I'm sure that a lot of them are indie artists that are trying to use that to get to some next step. And there were some good jazz musicians on there. And I think some of those situations, as an indie artist, that's a great gig to improve your skills. If you're somebody who, you need to hone things in before you go to being, a staple jazz player in your town, those are some options that are out there that, room and board's taken care of. You don't need money. You got nothing to spend it on. And you just, all you do is play. And
plus you have a constant shifting audience. I mean, if you want to play out five nights a week in your hometown, people are going to see you in the first couple of weeks. But
yeah.
If you're on a cruise ship that's constantly loading up new people,
Yeah, the captive audience.
Yeah. But captive audience.
You're stuck in capitalism.
So, yeah, that was an interesting experience.
As long as you don't make them walk the plank.
So, yeah, if anyone has any stories of anything like that, we'd love to hear them and share them on the podcast. So, any other final thoughts?
Nine.
You have nine final thoughts?
English, Chris. English.
Yet.
So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. And just remember, you can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And if you have found this podcast on iTunes, you can check out more show notes and links and resources at the podcast website, and that is cdbabypodcast.com. All right, well, that's it.
We're done.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Music Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.